Did you just hear what I said? So when you know doctrine, you come to understand who God is. Is that correct? You know, so to know him and to know about him is really saying the same thing. But in America, we do this religious thing that I just want to look up here, know him. Well, that's charismaticism and it's foolishness. Because you don't know him until you know what he's like. And guess how you find out what he's like? He has to tell you. You can't figure it out on your own. Now, you can make up God. Obviously, over here is to love him. That is a big, and these are just a way of thinking. It's full orbed. It's the whole Christian life. And then, of course, to serve and obey him. And I think probably that summarizes the Christian life, those three pieces. If we're weak in any one of these, we're going to struggle. For all of you that are interested, I was talking to my wife about charismaticism. You're going to find a lot of highly smart people become charismatics. And the average Christian cannot figure it for the world how a person with those kind of brains would become a knucklehead. Do you know why? Because they live in their mind and they don't have the ability to integrate the whole Christian life. So they're like a pendulum. Whew, whew. They got two poles. The Christian life is a whole. So if we could say this another way, there's a doctrinal side. There is a relational side. And there's a practical side. And I don't know that you can separate these, but we try to. There are many Christians that want to focus on this. So they're very into really important things like creation. Let's talk about creation again. Or the rapture, or the Antichrist, or the King James Bible, or a thousand things that what? How much good does it do you in your practical life? The answer is zero. You say creation? Sorry, folks, I've watched all the videos. Don't help you a bit. Doesn't help you be a better parent. Doesn't help you witness to anybody better. It's something that gives you comfort. After a point, once you grasp creation, evolution, struggle, after that it's like, okay, what are we going to do now? Go talk to people. Well, we don't talk to anybody. You see, this separating, now some churches, this is what they do. Everything is emotions. Yes? There are some churches that try to make everything practice. But usually those tend to be very legalistic. And meaning it's so practical that we tell you how to get your hair cut, how many earrings a woman can have. Ladies, please look at me. I would not have any idea how many earrings you have. Unless it looks like you took a staple gun and how many earrings you have. Now, if I saw it stapled the whole ear, you know, I've seen them. Zip, 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 you know, look like zip. And some of them do the nose, and it's like, ooh, that's too much. Thank you. But practical then becomes craziness. How much makeup you wear. Again, I would not have any idea how much makeup you wear unless you look like a clown. I would prefer you to put enough makeup on where you look nice. Unless you think God created a barn that didn't get painted. You guys. It wasn't that funny. Hold on. Nancy, I wish I was mean until I see a little Fundy Baptist church and every woman there dresses the same in a long blue jean skirt down to the floor in white dirty tennis shoes, and the wives are never look good to anybody, and they are shamed for their bodies. By the way, things have consequences. And if you can't see that, you're not looking. And there's lots of them around. And you see it and you think, oh my goodness, these poor ladies. And if a wife is shamed for her body, how does that work out in marriage? Please tell me. Yes. I mean, this just, come on. You don't have to look like a Hollywood glam star. Somewhere in between that and looking like the old barn that's fallen in is a good place. There you go. Enough preaching for this morning. Happy? Just find out what your husband would like. If he's happy, I'm happy. Most of the time. All right, but Tom, if he's already chasing other women, because nobody's lusting after that. Woo! Now, what is the book of Psalms about? Please look at me. The book of Psalms has elements of all three of these, of course, correct? But the book of Psalms is going to have a lot of, it's going to filter the doctrine and the practice through the relational, emotional side. So I'm not saying it's all about emotions, because it's not. Because there's lots of doctrine there, but it's going to tilt this way. Whereas if you go to Romans, you're going to get a lot of doctrine in the first part, and then you're going to get a lot of practice after chapter 12, or in chapter 12 and following. So you have different aspects. The Psalms is going to tell you how to love Him. And boy, it's not going to tell you to praise Him every day. It's going to tell you to learn to wrestle with your problems, life. See, it's too late for me to help Robert today. You do know that, don't you? Boy, it's too late to learn anything once your mom has died, now your dad's gone. You know, whatever he's going to go through, he's going to have to, whatever he's learned is what he's going to take with him. Most of us want to learn when we're in the crisis. No, the time to learn is the day after you get saved, you start moving forward. Let's look at Psalm 13. This is one of the Psalms. There's so many different kinds of Psalms. Many, many kinds of Psalms. If you're a younger Christian or you're a Christian that still doesn't get it, folks, don't expect the book of Psalms to all sound the same. Many kinds of Psalms. How long will thou forget me, O Lord? Have you ever prayed this way? Let me ask a different question. Some of you that were not asleep 15 years ago, we had a missionary family come here that had lost a son. You all remember that. And they got over it. Remember, Pam? The husband said, I got over it in between here and the airport. And I'm like, what? You just lost your son and, boy, I got peace. You know where they learned that from? They learned that from a church. That Christians smile all the time. They have the what? The victory. Well, why didn't the Psalms have the victory? Because victory, whatever that means, is a process. So you probably should learn this psalm and learn how to work through this psalm. By the way, I think 10 years later, if you're still suicidal, probably you haven't learned anything either. But I got news for you, folks. You can claim the victory, but you ain't got the victory. You're going to go down the ditch. How long will thou forget me, O Lord, forever? How long will thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me? Consider and hear me, O my Lord, O Lord my God. Lighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemies say, I have prevailed against him. And those that trouble me rejoice when I am moved. But you start to see, and by the way, I don't think this is a, I believe there tends to be a cyclical process, but I think the thing about a process is it tends to continue to cycle. I don't know. Most of you know Dr. Moritz, our friend of this church. He lost a son in 1968 on a church activity. They were on the Rock River, which is out west. Not, I wouldn't consider it a creek, but they called it a river. It's a small river, and they were doing pontoon boats. They came back, docked the pontoon boats. His little son, I think his son was 4, ran in between 2 cars and just stepped out, and the car was here. I mean, there was just no time. He was dead instantly. Now, Dr. Moritz is not highly emotional. He told me, he says, I think I remember him every day. Now, I don't know that everybody would, but the next time, see, the problem is some of us have never suffered anything yet. Robert sent me the horrible picture. You got it. They showed Dad November 1st in the Philippines. Did you guys see that? And 10 days later, November 11th, he's on a respirator, basically dead. He went over because, you know, November 1st, that period of time, everybody goes out to the cemeteries to, now Christians don't go out and worship or anything, but they go out and pay respects and think about their family. So he was there in the Philippines when I was there, right before I left. All right, Psalm 15. Does anybody have questions? You see the circle, by the way? How long? You start here. You kind of cycle down. You get down here, he's praying. Then when you get up here, he's starting to have confidence again. And I think, friend, that is kind of the way life works. When you're walking with God, it's not just, God, give me the victory. Folks, people do this at funerals. You now go to funerals where you're not allowed to weep. You have to have a celebration. I won't say any more about that, other than it's an abomination. Look what it says in verse 5. But I have trusted in thy mercy. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. I will sing unto the Lord because he hath dealt bountifully with me. So you come out with some hope. You know, up here, hope and confidence. Does everybody agree with that? It's a cycle process. Folks, this is called a lament psalm. It's a psalm where there's times to grieve. Grief, grieving loss. So let's ask a question. I had this conversation with somebody connected to this church this week. A young person, not 50, a 12-year-old, let's pretend 10 years old. And that young person loses their parent. Are there implications to that? So what is the worst thing you could do with that child? Somebody, I want you to raise your hand. I want to have a conversation. Yes, Christy. What happened to me in eighth grade? One of my best buddies, Gary Powers, hanged himself to death, whether accidentally or intentionally, I don't know. Eighth grade, 1 week before the end of school. Most people think he probably was messing around and accidentally did it. It doesn't make sense when it happened, where it happened, anything. But anyhow, Gary's dead. We go to the funeral. I'm a pallbearer. I didn't even know what a pallbearer was in eighth grade. I'm a pallbearer. I go there, and you know what? Not a single person said a single word to us. Except the principal got mad that we went to the funeral. Now, you understand, this is a rural country school, where you're in school with the same kids your whole life. You know, I didn't have kindergarten. First grade through 12th grade, I'm in school with the same kids. Gary Powers is dead, and the principal's mad, and nobody even bothers to say, how are you guys doing? His friends. So what impact, Christy, does that have in a young person's life? Okay. Cassie. You know what it does to young people? Anybody? Thank you. It stunts their growth. That's called arrested development. And all arrested development is this. You stop growing in some place. The conversation happened that I had. Someone that comes to this church sometimes. And why is this particular individual fixated on checking guys out? And I said to the other person, I bet you somewhere around the, by the way, what age group of young ladies, so you got to know a lot of things. What age group of young ladies where they start becoming fixated on guys? Do you know when it is? Let's ask another question. When do they start selling music to kids? The tweeners. 10 to 12, 10 to 13. Why? Because they have money and they spend money. Listen, the reason you have the kind of music in America that you have is because people our age don't spend money on music. Hello? Kids do. I said to the person that asked the question, I said, this is what I said, almost exact words. I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. Something happened in her life around age 10 because she acts like a 10-year-old. Folks, I haven't thought about a Hollywood star since I was a teenager. Do you realize things happen if you don't know how to work through the process and you can't help your children and grandchildren and kids in Awana, etc.? And we have it in our school right now. What? You see the damage done. And all of a sudden, arrested development means some area of their life. It can be social. It can be emotional. It can be mental. Something gets askew. And it usually is like all of a sudden they stop growing. If it's severe enough, look at me, World War II in the Philippines, how tall are the women? It not only stunted those areas, it even physically stunted their growth because of lack of food and all the other things that went with it. It's very common to see, you go out in the rural provinces and see women, they're all in the 70s and 80s, or 80s now, and they're very small. Folks, this is serious business. You just learned a psalm. What you going to do with it? Get to some happy stuff? I don't want to read Psalm 13 every day. I want to know the process. How about you? I want to know that it's okay for me. By the way, who's he praying to? Who's he talking to? People that don't know this process, who do they talk to? Themselves or people all the time? See, the psalmist's talking to God. God, how long are you going to abandon me? All right, we'll move on. There's many kinds of psalms. I want you to see, by the way, the psalms give us something to relate to God with. Chapter 15. Lord, we're back to the questions again. Who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? I'm guessing he's not thinking about who actually lives in the temple. I'm guessing he's using that metaphorically of what? What? No. He's using it metaphorically of what? Being in God's presence. He's not interested in the priest. Who shall abide in thy tabernacle and dwell in thy... He that walketh uprightly, worketh righteousness, speaketh the truth where? See, if you can't tell the truth to yourself, you'll never go any place as a believer. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, I think there's another word for that, chismus, gossip, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned or condemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. You ever meet a person you can depend on them because what they say is what they do? Oh, yeah. He that putteth not out his money to usury, and that's a whole world of discussion, nor taketh reward against the innocent, he that doeth, he, this is the reason it's not priest, Frenchie, you didn't hear the word metaphor. It's using the language of the temple because that's where God manifested himself as God's presence. Who's going to be able to abide? He or she that doeth these things shall never be moved. This is a totally different kind of psalm. It's a psalm trying to teach you what God's looking for in your soul. What's he looking for? Someone that walks uprightly, works righteousness, speaketh the truth in his heart. Look at me in the eyes. Can you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about everything? Or are there areas you're just flat out liars? I'm just asking. Do you ever have a problem with liars? Yeah, does it end in Y? But what's the problem, folks? Is there something wrong with lying? The worst lies are the ones you tell to yourself. That's just a great psalm. Let's look at, let's skip over to Psalm 37. Do you all know why I'm doing this? Can I say this to the younger Christians? The book of Psalms is a whole treasury of riches. My goodness, we need to spend time reading the book of Psalms. Fret not. I don't know, Dave Haas, what does Psalm 37, the first line, say in the ESV? I know you're reading it. He uses the same word. Fret is probably not one of the biggest words in our mind, is it? Fret. Yeah, worry. It's part of us. Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down, like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord. Do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Now, I don't even want to deal with that verse. That verse is so beautiful and so twisted. Because some people think, you know, if I just pretend God's going to give me the desire, and it's like, why are your desires always greedy? You know, I don't think he's talking about greed there. You know, are you all ready? I have a mansion. You know what? Tom Lexbeck here is getting an outhouse in heaven. I'm getting a mansion. That's that kind of thinking. Get a life, folks. I don't think he's talking about you having, man, I'm going to have a 28-room mansion in heaven. Folks, you're going to be with the Lord. That's the only thing that's important. Yes. Oh, yes, sir. And gives you things worth having and worth enjoying. Absolutely. And that's what it's talking about. How about the next one? Is beautiful to me. Commit thy way unto the Lord. That's hard to do. Because most of us, no matter how old we get, we still have our own plans. We never get around to saying, Lord, I don't know where I think I know where I should go, but I'm going to commit my way unto you. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light and thy judgment as the noonday. Verse 7 is impossible. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in the way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger. Forsake wrath, and fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. For evildoers shall be cut off. But those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Now, some of this, by the way, friend, is specific to Jewish believers, probably even millennial ideas. But the broad concepts are work with us. Can I ask you a question? Please look at me. Do you understand what you have just experienced? You have experienced a cycle which talks about loss and struggle. You have experienced what's God looking for in the heart. And now you have experienced how are you to live your life? Trust, rest, commit. Yes? Fret not. What's fretting? Dave, I don't know what fretting is, but I know what it looks like. And some people, that's their whole life. They're always nervous. What are you nervous about? What is the worst thing that can happen to you? You could die and go to heaven. That's terrible. Miserable. You know, there comes a place you mean, are you really saved? Why are we so stroked out? Well, that's the psalm. Are you all with me? Do you like that? Well, I'm just going to keep doing this because I want to irritate you. Psalm 51. Yes, we need this psalm sometimes too, don't we? Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. And friend, David wasn't asking to be saved. David was doing what? David had done some pretty bad things. Wash me, and the old King James says thoroughly, which means thoroughly, same word, from mine iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For what? I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Tim, if some kid came and said this to you, I'd have to go to the hospital to find you because you'd be in intensive care with a heart attack. I sinned against God. Oh, my goodness. And by the way, I'm not picking on our school. Do you understand? This is human nature. And here's the problem. If Tim has this problem with the kid, it's almost always the problem of the parents. Because what we have learned, and it really takes years to learn this, the sins of the parents show up right in the kids. And the kids that don't have these sins, the parents don't have these sins, that they don't show up in the kids. I like this. Now we'll go back to 49. 49 is one of my favorite chapters of Psalms, but I wouldn't recommend you read it often. Hear this, all you people. Give ear. All ye inhabitants of the world, both, I love this in Hebrew, sons of Adam and sons of Ish, low and high, rich and poor together, my mouth shall speak of wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be of understanding. I will incline mine ear to a parable. I will open my dark saying upon a harp or some sort of a stringed instrument. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil, when the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about, that they that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. Now, folks, this could be either, and I actually think it's the first, primarily. It doesn't make a difference how rich you are. Sooner or later, all your money can't buy enough technology to keep you alive. Hello? Cannot. Yeah, you say, I'm a multi-billionaire and I can have the best technology on earth. And okay, and you can have more than I can have, but you get extended 2 days. Let's go on. Now, it also might mean also what? Eternal. I'm not saying that might not be an implication. He goes on to say, for the redemption of their soul or their life is precious, and it ceaseth forever. That he should still live forever and not see corruption. See, that's the reason I'm saying it's talking about life. For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person perish, and leave their wealth to others. Verse 10 is a very hard verse. Because, friend, the best, smartest, brightest, most godly people die just like the fool. That's hard for me. Is that hard for you to accept? Really hard for me to accept. Sometimes they die younger. Verse 11. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling place to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. He is like the beast that perish. That their way is their folly, yet their posterity, they believe the same thing. Hello? Do you know what's the funniest thing about life? Every kid that grows up in a home that's a disaster knows one thing. My home won't be that way. And the chances are 99% sure their home will be exactly what they grew up in. We tend to confirm what went before us. It has that little word, selah, which minimally means take a breath. 14. Like sheep, they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. And their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. But God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall receive me, selah. I love verse 15. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased, for when he dieth, he shall carry away. What? His glory shall not descend after him. Though while he lived, he blessed his soul, and men well praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. He shall go to the generations of his fathers. They shall never see light. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beast that perish. Have you ever read that recently? Huh? Can I ask you a question? Why haven't you? Can I ask you another question? Here's our problem. We're not reading enough of Scripture in this room. It becomes very obvious to me. We don't know how to read it. Folks, this should be second language to every person in this room. This is a fundamental Bible-oriented Baptist church. Is that true? So the center of this world should be the Word of God. The Psalms should be the... They're what help us in this. Now, it's not that they don't have doctrine, and it's not that they don't have practice, but they're going to deal with it more through the relation and the emotion of a person. I love it. All right, we'll do a little bit of notes this morning. Any questions, comments? Do you know I just gave you a selection? Years and years ago, I read through some more Psalms, and I had a person that was here that day. He said to me, please don't ever read that Psalm again. Somebody tell me what Psalm that is. What? Oh, there's a psalm that doesn't have a happy ending. Psalm 88, you get down to the end and you're like, where can I commit suicide at? Oof. There is no hope. And by the way, in one sense, there is absolutely no hope. In one sense. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you some basic thoughts about the psalms. So you've already experienced some psalms. First of all, the Psalms, and I know this is very difficult for us, the Psalms are poetry. They're what? Poetry. This is what makes the Psalms the Psalms. They're poetry. Now, they're not English poetry. They're not Western poetry. But they're poetry of that variety. So when you read them... Well, I'm going to get to some of these ideas. We're going to come back to this next week. Let's turn the next page. I'm going to jump ahead and I'll come back next week. Number three. Here's poetry in a biblical sense. There are really, this is life in a biblical sense when you're reading biblical poetry. The Psalms, number three, are image rich. This is my language, image rich. Are image saturated. So when you're reading the Psalms, Frenchie, and you it says something like, well, who shall abide in your tabernacle? You have to understand, nobody necessarily slept in the tabernacle. It's using an image because from the biblical teaching of 1 Kings, that's where God was going to manifest himself. So it's using an image that any Jewish person is immediately going to think, who's going to abide there? Where God is, where God manifests himself. You see, he's using an image. You've got to think images. And frankly, I know this for sure. Americans aren't good with images of this variety. Part of it is we don't read a lot in general. We don't read poetry of any kind. Do any of us? Maybe somebody here reads poetry. Poetry's not real big in our culture anymore. It's almost, and the poetry that's written is not very poetic usually, strangely enough. Number four, this is building on that. The Psalms incorporate or use images from human experience. They use or incorporate images from human experience and the, what's A-N-E mean? Thank you. Ancient Near East, meaning where the Jewish people lived, that period of time. Now, why is this important? I'm going to use an image this morning. In the first point of the sermon, I'm going to use an image that people in Palestine could not possibly have ever used. I'm going to use a potato, and I'm going to use rice. And nobody in David's time had ever seen either one. So don't expect they're going to use the same images that we have. So when you read Psalms, you have to put yourself in their place, understanding images from the ancient Near East. Now, they would understand wheat. King James would properly and improperly translate it corn, but corn is just British for grain. So yeah, you'll get that. But you're going to have images. Now, I still remember Cliffy reading the Bible in Cebuano. And I cannot remember what was the word for snow. Because how much snow have you seen in Dumaguete? Zero. Is there snow no place in the Philippines, is there? Not even in the mountains. So how do you transport an image of snow to a place that's never seen snow? You saw that? Yes, and Pastor Ulysses Fundado's brother Dennis has been here. Dennis is... I should have him come and tell this. I think he's back home now. Dennis said the first time he came to America, when he visited us, he said, I was at some place and I saw snow. But they don't know what that means. See, it's pretty. So he says, I took off my shoes, took off my socks, and I ran outside. He said, I'm stepping in the snow, and he says, all of a sudden, it's like, my feet are freezing. Yeah, he's seen it in a postcard. Now, that's exactly right. May I say something to you? You might have seen a typhoon in a postcard, too. I've only been in a little one time. I don't ever want to be in another one. Yeah, see, you understand. Images come from where it's from, those kind of images. So anytime you read, you have to understand their images. We've already looked at Psalm 13, verse 2. How long will thou forget me, O Lord? No, that's just human experience. The experience of thinking or feeling God has abandoned you. Can I ask you, have you ever felt that way? I have. A couple times in my life, I felt like God abandoned me. How long will thou hide thy face from me? There's two reasons people hide their face from you. One is they're ashamed of you, and another is they're experiencing shame of their own. Sometimes someone's done you wrong and they don't want to look at you in the eyes. So they avoid you. But in this case, I think David's thinking, or the psalmist, something's wrong. how long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Folks, so this is what we're going to think about for a moment. We prayed for Robert this morning. Let me ask you all a question. I would like to have answers, by the way, please. Does Robert talk about how he feels often? And what do you assume from that? That he either feels fine or he doesn't have feelings. Would that be a correct conclusion? You see, Robert, I love Robert. Robert doesn't communicate especially feelings. I'm not convinced he can do that even with his wife. Some of us are not well geared with dealing with our emotions. I've said this publicly many times. Until I was 30, I didn't even know I had emotions. 30, 31 years old, I preached my first Mother's Day and cried in the pulpit. It took me somewhere like 6 months to get over that. I would wake up in the middle of the night in a panic. I got emotional. Men don't get emotional. Now, here's our problem. Does Robert cry out like this? I don't know. My guess is he's asking some hard questions right now. Why did Mom die and now Dad's gone? And maybe somebody here's the worst thing you can do. Walk in to where he's at and talk about yourself. Especially important things like, you know, I'm going on a vacation and it's 302 miles and we're going to get gas here and we're going to eat there. And first of all, nobody cares about that. And second of all, worse than all of that, do you realize how offensive that is to a person going through problems? When you can't shut up and actually shut up and listen? Now, if you're a good enough Christian, you have God. That's all you need. But sometimes it's nice for somebody to come alongside and just kind of... I'm guessing Robert has emotions. What do you all think? Actually, I find people that aren't very emotional the most emotional. You'll have to think about that for a while. People who don't share emotions are very emotional people. People that are always sharing emotions, those are just bubbles. They chase many of them during the day. We go on to the next passage. The Lord is my shepherd. Well, folks, I never grew up around sheep, have you? I saw some sheep as a kid. He maketh me to lie down in green. I understand the green pastures part, do you? You know, the funny thing is animals like to go wherever they're not. Can I say that again? Animals like to go wherever they're, say it with me. You know, the funniest thing in the world is see a cow and you got grass this high in the field and they're sticking their head through the fence and there's nothing over there, but they want to be over there. Of course, humans aren't like that. He maketh me to lie down. And the funny part is you even miss the word he makes. He has to force you to lie down in green pastures. Why? There's something wrong with us. What is it? Sin. I like the next one. He leads me beside the still waters. Now, I mean, I understand that. Let me see here. Linda and Ade, didn't you go to the Jordan? Did you take a drink? Wasn't the Jordan River beautiful when you were there? What was it? Linda, what was it? Muddy? You didn't think it was nice. Remember the story in the Old Testament about who is the guy? He says, man, we got some much better rivers where I'm from than this. You understand that now, don't you? You just want to put your finger in there and say, I've been in the Jordan River, and it's like, it's a mud hole. Well, what is still waters? Still waters are waters that move, but they're not flooding, so they're clear. You can drink from them. You ever seen what cows do to water after 3 minutes? Stir up the mud and other stuff, which we won't mention. These are images from the ancient Near East. There's people in this room that probably think chicken comes from McDonald's. You don't even know these kind of images. Purdue. Verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I don't know all that the valley of the shadow of death means. I do know this. It's one thing to walk outside when there's lights, and there's another thing to walk outside without lights. And maybe you're walking down in a big valley. I mean, on our farm, we had hills and ravines. And you go down in those ravines at nighttime, you can't see anything. Yeah, I understand. I will fear no evil. Why not? For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemy. Here's one that's just totally out of our world. Thou anointest my head with oil. Why would you want God to put oil on your head? Well, if you live in a dry world, I think you would understand. My cup runneth over. How about this one, Psalm 40? Do you all understand? These are images. Folks, look at me. If you're going to read the Psalms, it has images in it. You better know what they are. You better be able to think, which means just doing this, taking your Bible, and your eyes touch each word so you can check off that you have been spiritual today, will be of how much benefit for you? Spending time meditating, thinking is where the action is on every piece of the Bible, but especially the Psalms. Because images are, they're rich. They're meant to be rich. We sing a song about Rock of Ages cleft for me. I never understood that until Jenny and I were in specifically Arizona. We were in a place up in the north. What is the name of that? And I will not be able to remember the name of it. It is an ancient place where they have lots of pueblos. Beautiful, very interesting. It is so hot. It's about 110 on average. You feel like an oven when you walk in there. They tell you to make sure you take water. Man, we took a whole containers of water with ice. It was so hot. We wanted to find the way up to the top. We've been there twice. The first time we got there, it was so hot, I said, Jenny, I don't think we're ever getting on top. We walked in the wrong way, and we walked around. We got lost. We finally found it. And to get up to the top, you walk. There's a big piece of the ledge that has split. And there's a crack in that ledge, and you walk up that crack. When we got into that crack, the temperature dropped 30 degrees. That's when I understood passages like this. You're like, wow, it's nice. I said, Jenny, can we just stay here? We never did. The first time we went, we didn't go up on top. The second time, that's the only thing. We drove in, walked right to the place, and walked up on top. And it was miserable up there, too. Ugh. But it was fun. Then I thought, why did people live here? All right, we'll look at a couple more and be done. As the hart panteth after the water brooks. I don't know what a hart is, deer, some variety. So panteth my soul after thee. How about this? Our God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. There is a river, the streams thereof whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High God. Next week we will pick up with images. We'll finish up the first part too, and we'll pick up here. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time as we consider and think about Psalms in Jesus' name.
accomplish it?
You remember what we're doing, right? We're going to, first, we're going to sing in unison to the middle, which we're doing. Now, hear me when I pray, that's where the spirit is.
Okay.
Second verse, all parts. Third verse, Pastor Clark and I are just going to ooh, and then add, but you guys are going to just
sing
all four verses.
All four verses, right, yeah.
And fourth verse.
Good.
There you go. 407. You remember what we were doing, right? Noel's going to sing with Cliff. And sing with
Cliff. Just sing the melody.
Yeah. The melody.
Okay. 407.
Split in the middle of the first verse, we're going to sing unison to start. Third verse, and split in the middle and go high.
All right, let's give it a shot. So the, or unison the whole first verse?
No, just
the whole verse. Oh, it's split it in parts, yeah.
Let's go on.
Second verse, we...
If you get it,